It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Well, the only reason we're not afraid is because we know what's coming. I mean, if you see the, if you're standing on the train track and you got the headlight bearing down on you, and here it comes, it's warp speed, it's a bullet train. It's coming out, and you go, ooh, that's a bullet train. And then you just know to step onto the platform and let it go whizzing by. Well, then why would you be afraid? You know, it's like coming down the train, you get on the step over here. Well, what if you don't know? What if you're a deer? You know, what if you're sitting there staring at, boom, hit you. You know, that, that's what we're trying to do here. We're just trying to get you all caught up. Now, what we're going to do today is we're going to spend at least a couple hours with my good friend, Charles Goyette. Now, Charles is, man, he's been doing it a long time. He wrote the book, The Dollar Meltdown, and it went, platinum or something. You know, I mean, it, New York Times bestseller list gets translated into Korean and Chinese. I mean, you know, somebody said, ooh, what's that boy got to say? And he's been a busy boy all this summer and everything. We haven't had time to get caught up on a lot of stuff. Well, that's what's going to happen today. Because I have so many questions, and I need somebody to help get me some answers. I mean, I call a lot of guys, a lot of economists, have them come and explain it to me, and they get in it, and all of a sudden, I can see the mind fog around. They have no idea. You know, I mean, I just say I'm asking a simple question, and they have no idea. And I know at least you got an idea. I don't know. We'll see if you're right or not.
All they have is like a formula designed by Irving Fisher, who was a famous kind of a macroeconomist back in the 30s, who told us that stocks had reached a permanent plateau high in 1929. He was a Yale economist. That's all they know. He came up with a formula that's kind of balderdash. And so, you know, they all go to college and they get PhDs and they learn this formula. And it's like they don't have any idea how the economy really works and what makes for prosperity and what makes for insolvency.
You know what that reminds me of? We'll get into your article.
Hi, Ernie. It's good to see you,
bud. How are you, man? You know, and we're gonna find out what you've been up to here lately. But I tell you what, people, what, you know, spark my interest and, you know, please, Charles, come help me. They first make mad. Summertime Tales of National Bankruptcy is the title of the article on Lou Rockwell. And it just reminds you that the people that are now, you know, in charge were the guys that did this. You know, you put these names up. You go, they were Goldman Sachs, man. These are the guys that did it. Oh, please give me. And then they run the bailout money. Then they become in charge of it in the, you know, Obama administration. And, you know, and Charles was the guy, man. It came down to he would follow the individuals and who was doing it. And I'm just like, you know, I don't even care. It's a government. They got a shiny badge. Bad guy. You know, I know they're going to do this. Well, sometimes we need to walk through the morass. But let's go ahead and find out, Charles. What the heck you been doing, man?
Hey, Ernie, it's good to see you, though. You know what I did today? I did I helped some of the guys, like Trevor Lyman and stuff, do a money bomb for a Senate candidate in the state of Washington, Clint Didier. And I know you'll remember this because you know more about football than I do, but do you remember when Washington Redskins went to the Super Bowl like two times, three times in three or four years? And they had the Hogs. They're very famous for their front line, the Hogs. And when the Cardinals hired the guy that put the, it doesn't matter about the Cardinals. Anyway, Clint Didier is one of the guys who was a Super Bowl star on the Washington Redskins from a farm family in eastern Washington. He's back there now. He's a guy, middle-aged guy, farming with his family. He's been out of football for, you know, 15 years or something like that. And he's a Ron Paul kind of candidate running for Senate in Washington. So I helped do a money bomb for him today. A couple weeks ago, we did a money bomb for Peter Schiff, who's running for the Senate in Connecticut. helped raise some money from him and for him. And I guess I'm going to roll up my shirt sleeves and out of respect for Dr. Paul, help Rand Paul with a money bomb coming up in a couple of weeks too. So that's some of the stuff that I've been
doing.
Well,
how'd they go? How are they doing?
I left before it was over so I could come be with you.
Oh, see how nice you are?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you know, we got money, but we're playing politics.
But, you know, if you think about that, and you know how I have no regard for politicians, and I'm really not interested in the political process as the salvation for this country. But you start thinking about it. One of the guys that called in on the money bomb for Clint Didier in Washington before me was a candidate for the House of Representatives in Northern California in Nancy Pelosi's district. So he's running against Nancy Pelosi.
I had him on the air.
John Dennis.
Mm-hmm.
He's rock solid, man. He's a great guy. And I'm thinking, okay, if you can get, like, it doesn't take a lot of people to win a revolution. If you could get, I know I'm just, you know, this is, what do they call it, a pipe fantasy or something. But I'm thinking if you could get 5 or 6 guys, that's all it would take. You get 5 or 6 guys in the Senate and the House that really understand, you know, 2 + 2 = 4 economics, liberty economics, market economics, Austrian economics. They understand that the country can't spend its way to prosperity. It would only take a handful of these guys to really make a difference. Now, I'm quite candid and was on the air that know the value of having some of these guys, in my view, on there, if they were to win, would be to help construct, you know, something a little more rational on the other side of the collapse. Because, I mean, I think, you know, the debt's already baked into the cake. I mean, it can't be avoided at this point. But it would still be helpful to have some of these guys. So hope springs eternal. And I, you know.
Well, that's kind of Peter Schiff's argument. He's like, you know, who do you think is going to rebuild this when it falls? You know, who's going to tell you what's what? Who do you want in there?
Yeah.
Maybe somebody knows what the heck's going on. And, you know, I guess if you got good guys coming in and, you know, the Lord doesn't take Ted Stevens types, you know, then, you know, then, you know, maybe there might be, you know, the seesaw gets balanced.
Is that what happened to him? I guess he didn't get the message in his first plane crash 30 years ago.
Well, it was
your line, not mine.
I'm just, you know, you can't let that one slide by. You know, because he knew a lot of bodies were buried and a lot of bridges were built. I mean, you know, there's.
I used to ask people why in Alaska that I knew. There's a lot of good people in Alaska. I used to say, why do you guys elect him? And they said, well, he's just a plain down to earth guy.
You're waiting all day.
I got the radio guy personality coming out again. Oh, bottle that back up.
How long you been waiting to say that?
It's so bad.
Oh, you know, it's not even a day yet. Usually you wait at least till the second or third day. I just, you know, oh, please. So, whatever. We're irreverent here. We're
irreverent, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's what's happening. Well, you know, the one thing, let's go ahead and get into this. It starts off with, you know, the main thing that you're saying here is that, you know, you got the same people that are running this are the ones that sold the concept that we're going to need this money, too big to fail, kind of. Well, who were these people? What positions were they in then? And what positions are they in now?
Well, you know, there are really three parts to the story about first they make mad. That comes from an old line from, I think it's Euripides, whom the gods would destroy, first they make mad. And it's evidence that, you know, that we're on the pathway to destruction because we're absolutely out of our minds insane in this upside down topsy-turvy world in which, for example, now you think about this, they just passed so-called financial reform legislation, right? They're supposed to reform the financial system. And so that things like this. So in the face of financial reform legislation, the real financial reform, did they pass the audit the Fed bill? Did guys who signed on to co-sponsor the audit the Fed bill vote for it? No, they voted against it. How about this? How about when Bear Stearns fell apart in I guess it was like April of 2008, and they rushed in, the Federal Reserve rushed in with a rescue package for Bear Stearns. Bernanke and Tim Geithner, now Treasury Secretary, was the head of the New York Fed, at the time, Geithner and Bernanke go to Congress and they testify. Now, when you testify before Congress, you're under oath. I mean, they lock Martha Stewart up for stuff like this. When you testify before Congress, you're under oath. So now we find out all these months later, under oath or in testimony, and it's presumptively under oath anyway before Congress, Bernanke and Geithner testify to the assembled Senate that, These securities that we took onto the Fed's balance sheet, so we put the U.S. dollar at risk, we put the American taxpayers on the hook for these Bear Stearns securities, we took these things onto the balance sheet, we gave them money, but all of these securities that we took on at the risk of the American people were investment grade. That means that they're performing assets and they're rated assets and so on. But at the now we find out, all these months later, and matter of fact, Bloomberg, I mean, much less audit the Fed, Bloomberg had to go to federal court to sue the Federal Reserve to get a release of a list of some of the assets that were taken on. Now we find out at the time Bernanke and Geithner testified, they knew, the Fed already knew that this thing was loaded with mystery meat that were non-performing assets, and they have not been held accountable for that. Let me pick up the thread on that when we continue.
Toxic is the theme. We'll be right back here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, and Charles Goyette, author of The Dollar Meltdown. We'll be right back.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Lunatic fringe out there. He's in here. It's Charles Goyette, author of The Dollar Meltdown. We'll get into, you know, he's already sold another book. Man, he done made him some money. They said, ooh, we need you to write us another one. So he's working on that already. Well, we'll get back, you know, to all that and what he's doing. So we got plenty of time, but I want to finish up on this. We have Geithner and Bernanke, Paulson, all these guys are all in on this thing. They get up before Congress and they're saying, they go, Yeah. We'll go ahead and take the taxpayers and we'll put them in debt and we'll promise this, but we're going to guarantee it. You know, we're going to get collateral for it. We're going to get this, you know, toxic waste goop poured into this bucket, you know, from the banking industry. All the, they get the stuff on you. You're on the hook now. They get the billions of dollars. So, you know, what was it that we got and what was its real value and what did they do with the money that we gave
them?
Well,
let me even go back and be philosophical about it with you on the subject, because there's a sound philosophic principle that is found. It's found in Christianity, and it's found in many of the major religions and a lot of the philosophical systems of the world. It just makes sense. In Christianity, it's put this way. You know, you prove yourself to be a performing and honorable, conscientious steward over these small things, and then you're given control over larger things, progressively larger. So you want to rule a kingdom, or you want an empire, or whatever you want to be in charge of. You want to be able to show that you're able to run your own household first. You know, small things first, and then you get progressively more responsibility. And that's found in like all kinds of philosophical systems. So here's the Congress of the United States. They have they have these quasi-private banksters, Bernanke and Geithner, come before them and give wrong testimony at the time which they had constructive knowledge, and that's a legal doctrine that means that if they can't say that they didn't know because they were in a position that they should have known, so they're charged with knowing. So they had constructive knowledge or knew overtly that these assets were junk. That these assets they were taking on behalf of the taxpayers was trash. This was toxic paper that they were taking on. It was junk paper.
That's
junk
why
bonds.
They were there. Was
well,
to sell this crap.
But they testified to Congress that they weren't. Now, so
do you think Congress knew that they were lying?
Of course they did.
Of course they did.
Okay, but the problem is now that they run out and they promised to perform a overhaul of the financial system, financial re-regulation, financial reform and stuff, but they haven't been responsible for the direct testimony that they got in this whole thing just a couple of months ago. So I go on in this piece to talk about how mad we are. To talk about a little bit of the roots of the $700 billion Bush bailout. The $700 billion Bush bailout in the fall of 2008 was the one that Republicans couldn't bring themselves to really resist. Oh, they acted like it, you know, like we don't like this and stuff. But they voted for it. So Democrats voted for it. Republicans voted for it.
No, Republican John Shattuck from Arizona is the one that brought it back.
And he got invited to speak at the Tea Party in downtown Phoenix.
Yeah, where we had activists up there with signs that said, National Socialization of the Economy isn't fascist when I do it, SS Shattuck.
Yeah. So here's the way it works. And it's the $700 billion Republican bailout that justifies the $787 billion Obama stimulus program that grew to whatever it was, $826 billion. So you look at that, and now the illusion of people like Bernanke and the illusion of people like Geithner, who can't master, after all, TurboTax, the illusion propagated is that these are, you know, the fine engineers of monetary policy, and they're sitting in there in the marbled halls of the Federal Reserve and the Treasury, and you think that, you know, we need $700 billion to save the system, and you think, how did they come to that? You know, they must be burning the midnight oil in the Treasury offices in the Fed, and they're working with you know, spreadsheets and risk analysts and systems analysts and stuff, figuring, okay, we need $1.86 billion here to stop the flow of that and to keep that from, and we need 2.6, and you add it all up and it comes to a mysterious round number of $700 billion. So that's the illusion that they perpetrate, you know, that it's all these finest minds, but actually, here's what it was. It was a guy by the name of Neil Kashkari. Oh, what an appropriate name that is. Neil Kashkari, also a muckety-muck at Goldman Sachs with Henry Paulson, came with Paulson to the Treasury. He made the number up. He did it on his BlackBerry. And it worked like this. He goes to Paulson, well, maybe we can just get $1 trillion. You know, just get a bunch of money. It's like Mickey Rooney in those old 1930s or 40s movies. Hey, kids, let's put on a play. It's like, hey, let's get $1 trillion. And Paulson, a little more mature and wiser and always watching, said, well, you know, they just won't give us $1 trillion because it's like they price gasoline at 249.9, you know, because they don't want to price it at 250 because it seems like it's lower if it's 249.9. He goes, no, we can't ask for $1 trillion. They won't give us $1 trillion. So they, well, how much can we get out of these guys? Now, they're not figuring out how much they need to stop the collapse because they really don't know. They're just like guys. They're just guys from the hood. So Kashkari pulls out his BlackBerry. So help me, they figured this out on his BlackBerry. And he goes, well, let's see, we got $11 trillion in mortgages in this country. We got $3 trillion commercial mortgages in this country. It's $14 trillion. What if we just, like, 5% of that, $700 billion? Why don't we ask for $700 billion? He pulled the number out of his BlackBerry. he pulled the number out of his BlackBerry. They made this stuff up. They just made it up. So,
I remember this being reported. You know, yeah. I mean, this is stipulated.
That. Yeah, yeah. It's just they make this stuff up as they go along. So, I mean, if that's not enough for you, then what did they pass the other day? I can't even remember the number. Another, was it a $56 billion appropriation for the war in Afghanistan?
Is anybody even keeping track anymore?
I mean, it's just unbelievable. And so now the Afghan war is the longest war in American history, and no sooner did they pull that new appropriation out than Congress went on their summer vacation, their August vacation, and at the time they went on their August vacation, and just as they went out the door, the numbers rolled in for the deaths in Afghanistan of Americans. Highest death count in the 9-year course of the war for the month of July. So things are getting worse, not better, and they're appropriating more and more money, which, by the way, where do they get? They have to borrow it from places like China. So anyway, John Boehner is one of those plastic Republicans, and he's some leadership position somewhere in a house. I don't know exactly what he's, a minority leader or something like that. He let slip the other day. I know it was inadvertent because it's not on a Republican talking point. You're not supposed to talk like this. So he inadvertently let slip, you know, what are we going to do about this calamity that we've created he didn't say that we've created, but that's coming our way, created by the Republicans and Democrats. What are we going to do about all this? And he said, well, you know, we got Social Security people people retire at 65, we might have to slip that back and they retire at 70. Now, wait a minute. These people were told this was an insurance program. They were told there was a Social Security trust fund. They were told they paid in, they'd get this money back if they paid in all their lives. Believe me, a guy 65 has been paying into that thing for like, 48 years or something, been paying in and told him. Now, all of a sudden, John Boehner lets slip, oh, we might have to change that to, instead of to retiring at 65, retire at 70. Why? Well, he let slip. Why? To pay for the war in Afghanistan. Now, it's finally come to the point where the American people need to wake up and figure out, do you want your what prospects there were of your diminishing retirement put on hold for another 5 years so that we can continue to play war in Afghanistan and make guys like George Bush happy and make Obama feel like a great military leader, too? And, guys like Petraeus and who's that other guy they booted out the other day? I mean, at some point, this is what accounts for the American people starting to wake up and the tea parties and all of that stuff. They don't quite understand. They don't quite get it. But there is something fundamentally upside down, topsy-turvy in the world. And they're starting to wake up and they don't realize what it is yet. But they realize, wait a minute. You mean the dollar's so bad and our conditions are so bad that I'm supposed to retire at 65 and now it's going to be 70? And even then, it's only been in enough money to buy a can of tuna or dog food to feed me for the month? How'd that happen? To pay for your precious little overseas wars. Figure it out, Americans.
Well, we're going to try and figure it out more when we come back here and declare your independence with Charles Goyette, author of The Dollar Meltdown, and the nation's most independent talk show host here with me.
There are those that just want to be left alone. And those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
There's something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there, telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop. Children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
And we're just taking a break. Stop, look around, see what's going down. Who's a better guy to do that than my good friend Charles Goyette? I produced for Charles for years, and I'll tell you, it was a great pleasure.
It was a nightmare for you.
No, it wasn't.
Yeah, it was great.
I enjoyed it. You know, I tell you why. You know, because I got to learn a lot. I got to research all the stuff that I wanted, and we had a lot of people. I mean, we 3 hours a day, every day, morning drive, putting stuff up, and you only have like a half hour guest. We had lots of people. Man, boom, 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 and I got to squeeze in what I wanted every now and then. so we got the stuff out there. But I'm really starting here lately getting that, the feeling of the end game. It's like it's math. And a lot of the guests that we've had, and over the years I've had on this show and so on, and some of them without naming names, doesn't really matter. But, these guys are very well respected guys, and they, say some of the things that I'm, what are they thinking? And one of the things is that a lot of these guys I respect are saying that they don't fear any kind of a consolidation of the monetary system. They don't fear a national currency. They don't fear any kind of a consolidation of we're going to have a blah 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 national IMF whatever. And I have to ask them. I'm going, okay, why? Well, the U.S. would never, and the Fed would never. We'd never. Are you? That's it. That's your. What was that MK reasoning? America. America would never do that. I'm going, that's it? That's your reasoning? And I'm going, so what do you think about this? Hey, we got guys out there making shirts. Hey, Jeff, stop making noise, man. So, we're doing that. It's a workshop. We got a lot of stuff going. We got a bunch of shirts being made and stuff there out there making noise. So we'll keep it down for you. But that's what this place is. It's a workshop, man. People are busy. And I'm on the air 5 hours a day, man. They got to do it sometime.
Yeah.
So go ahead and tell me, on the international monetary thing, this is...
a threat? I mean, do you see it inevitable, or is there something? Why would they even say that they don't fear it?
Well, I'd be a little bit worried about it because, this currency crisis isn't our first rodeo, and a lot of things happen. I mean, it's a opportunity for sweeping changes in people's economic lives, and normally these things don't end very well. So the center isn't holding on our monetary system. Things are starting to fly apart, and I guess to people who don't watch it really closely, it seems like it's going in slow motion, and maybe things will hold together. People like me that watch it every day, that have been watching this stuff every day, and know the historical precedents, and written a book about it. I mean, this stuff is happening very fast. Things are flying apart right now, today, very fast. I mean, I'll give you an idea. I picked up the paper this morning. It's in USA Today, so you can see it all over the country. There's a story even in USA Today that federal workers, government workers, are paid twice what private sector workers are paid in terms of benefits and pay. It's right here. It's even on the front page of the local paper. It's on the front page of USA Today. It's all over the country. What we've already known, and then on top of that, today, the House voted. Nancy Pelosi gaveled into law a new, I think it was $26 billion special subsidy to keep paying more government employees. When we're on the verge of bankruptcy, and there wasn't enough money to pay them in states like California and places. So the federal government pulled another $26 billion out of where to pay them, so that they can earn twice what the average American worker is making for comparable sorts of jobs, twice in terms of salary and benefits.
End game.
It's the end game. Everything is falling apart, and it's happening very, very fast. I don't know. I'm not in the business of preaching fear. I don't know if there's anything to be fearful of, but you're sure better off reading the Dollar Meltdown and knowing how these things typically unfold, because it's a template. I mean, there are steps that happen, this happens and that happens, and typically this or typically that. Typically the politicians will react to a problem they created themselves by blaming somebody else. Here are the kinds of people they try to blame and the consequences of it. It could sometimes they try to blame somebody, a foreign devil, so that they can start another war and take the people's minds off it. I mean, but we've been down this road so many times with these fraudulent, convoluted monetary systems that they're liable to make it worse and make the American people more poor by adding another level of convoluted monetary system on top of this one as this one begins to implode. So they'll try to come up with a currency special drawing rights out of the International Monetary Fund or some other bogus monetary system that will be applauded by the news media. It'll be applauded by the economics professors. It'll be applauded by people in Congress and in Washington. Oh, they've stepped in, the real monetary experts, the Geithners and the Henry Paulsons and the Neil Kashkaris that pull these numbers out of their Blackberries, will come up with something else that will make the fundamental problem and the unraveling worse because it has been prolonged so much. So I don't know if it's something to fear, but it can get awfully, awfully ugly, and a lot of people can suffer some really serious deprivations in one of these currency things.
Okay, New American, 2 hours ago, you just do a little research, IMF report promotes world currency. An April report from the International Monetary Fund promoting a world central bank and a global fiat currency went totally undetected by the global press for months. But after a blog post earlier this month on the Financial Times website, it is now in the media spotlight. As the effects of the economic crisis continues to pile up, increasingly significant calls for a global monetary system administered by some world authority have been issued by world leaders, the United Nations, the media, and numerous economists, but the IMF report entitled Reserve Accumulation and International Monetary Stability offers very specific proposals which, not surprisingly, would involve handing it massive new powers over the global economy. It was so obvious you would see this coming. The fact that they even got an International Monetary Fund, that they would call something the International Monetary Fund. I mean, just that right there has got me worried. According to the paper published by the IMF's Strategy, Policy, and Review Department, growing hoarding of reserves by various governments and monetary authorities are leading to unsustainable imbalances and other problems. IMF says the figure is around 13% of global GDP, blah, 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 blah. But I'm telling you this. I am of the opinion that they want to. They always have wanted to. So the question is always, can they? It's not will they. Everybody always says, do you think they would do that? I don't know. Can they?
Mm-hmm.
Well, then they will. I mean, it's not more complicated than that. Here we have an entity that's already starting to issue, what do they call those in the banks?
Special drawing rights.
Special drawing rights. Explain that to me.
There's no explanation needed. It's fiat money. It's created money. It's just, it's created. And the member nations, you don't even want to know. It's a bureaucracy. It's not real money. If member nations pledge to support it or to redeem these things and so on with more of their freshly printed money. So the special drawing right of the IMF is just, it's just fiat money. It's just more made up money. It's money because they say so. Just like the U.S. dollar is money because it says on it, this is legal tender and you have to use it. And the courts won't enforce your contracts unless they're denominated in these dollars. So it's fiat. It's made up money and special drawing rights like a super fiat money. Now, my guess is, you know, we're all guessing based on what we know. My guess is that this isn't going to play. That once it becomes, you know, once the dollar becomes apparent to be a fraudulent super money, because it is, it's the international reserve currency, all that the IMF would, look, the only money the IMF has is money we give them. When the IMF auctions off gold to try to force down the price of gold, where did that gold come from? That was the American people's gold. That was the gold that was confiscated from the American people when it was called in by FDR. That was the gold that belonged to the American people. It was in the central bank vaults of the United States. It was in places like Fort Knox and stuff. That gold, and Congress passed a law and gave it to the IMF. They have no money. What does the IMF make that they sell that earns the IMF money? They don't make anything. They don't manufacture. It's like Russia. They don't make anything the world wants. Nobody buys anything from the IMF. IMF doesn't make it. So they have no money. The only money they have is the money that we give them, and we allow them to print out of thin air and say that we'll redeem it eventually with money that we'll print out of thin air. So the whole thing is a fraud. But here's the frustrating part about it, and it's implicit in what you just read, is that there already is a global currency. It's desirable. No, Charles. I was going to say it's desirable all over the world. It's not desirable if people flat out desperately want it, especially in troubled times, instantly liquid. It's valued in every corner of the world, the deepest jungles and the monetary centers of the world. It doesn't require Rube Goldberg devices of, who's it backed by and how fast they issue it and stuff. There is a global currency. It's called gold. Everybody wants it. But as you ended that story with the phrase, massive new powers over the global economy, that's what they want.
That is the goal. Don't ever be distracted by it. We got new printed money. Ain't it pretty? Well, that was just the excuse for them to get the power. We'll be right back with Charles Goyette here on Declare Your Independence of me, Ernest Hancock.
Roads? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
It ain't so groovy when you're screaming.
Spotlight it. You know, we can say, take a looky-see right over yonder, because that's what we got. Charles Goyette in here helping us because, man, he sees it with crystal clear tie, you know, saying that this is what's going on. We've been following this long. You know, it was such an enjoyable read, your book, The Dollar Meltdown. You get a master's degree in. You know, it was dense. It was a good story. It was a good way of telling it. It had a big impact, and I got to live it.
Yeah,
I remember all these. I remember just going, and you start to see the evolution of this. I mean, you remember things that they never bring out in the press. Does anybody even know spent all this money, did this to Congress? These guys were not in the administration.
Here's the commercial. Let me put the commercial in there. Buy my book, The Dollar Meltdown. So help me. This will arm you for what's happening. I had to laugh today. I picked up, I went online today and I went to one of the leading edge sites where, you know, I think that these guys are ahead of the mainstream. Doesn't say how much, right? But they're at least ahead of the mainstream, and it's just one of the places I normally check. And, they finally wrote about a little phenomena called stagflation. and how, well, gee, that's funny. We've got prices are going up. Prices of government's going up. Price of education's going up. Your price of insurance is sure going up. Cost of your taxes are sure going up. Cost of I saw here, and we're in Arizona. I saw last month the Arizona Farm Bureau said price of groceries had gone up 6% in the quarter. Price of gasoline is going back up. Oil's, I guess, it shouldn't be missed by anybody. Oil's back around $80 a barrel again. Has anybody noticed copper's back up? Has anybody noticed what's going on with agricultural prices like wheat? Wheat has just exploded. So you go, wait a minute, but we have this recession and we got 20% of unemployment in America. So you have all these unemployed people and yet prices are going up. And that's what was called in the 70s. It was stagflation. It was a stagnant economy, a non-growth economy with prices going up. And everybody's going, oh, we got deflation. No, you had a bubble popped in housing. You know, the air got let out of that one. You had a bubble popped in the stock market. Yeah, the air got let out of that one. But did somebody realize that the price of everything is going up around here? That the government's got to have more money? That the government's desperate for more money to keep the game in place, and they're going to charge you for it? Cost of that's going up. Cost of oil's going up because the dollar's not worth what it was. I mean, the cost of all these things is going up. But the unemployment rate's 20%. People don't have jobs, and they're losing their homes.
Well, Obama wants to have automatic refinancing of your home. And the thing is, I'm going like this, where did all these homes, 80%, you know, is Fannie Mae or something, or the new mortgages they had and so on. I'm going, well, when these all go back and they are the subprime toxic assets that they were saying all good and wonderful and collateral for the gazillions of dollars that weren't, and I'm going, where is all this going? Obama became your landlord. The government has it. Well, of course they can forgive it. It's theirs. You know, they have it. They bought it. It's on their spreadsheet now. So we started you don't know this. We started following a house. It was a defunct little development of just a few houses in Surprise. It's out where Dean lives, okay? And he says, you got to see these, man. You could just squat them. I mean, you know, heck, they're just sitting out here. It hadn't even been lived in. They were for $400,000 and so on. You know, 4-bedroom, 3-car garage, 2-acre lots, that kind of thing, right? With no paved streets. It's out in the rural, you know, county area up there. So we started checking it, and they're going, okay, this developer went bankrupt. It went to this bank, and this bank sold to this bank, went to this bank, Delaware Corporation. And I remember this with the Resolution Trust Corporation with the savings and loans thing. What they did is they took all these, put them in big lots or whatever, filled out the right paperwork, did retroactive legislation, and all of a sudden they bought them from the government at pennies on the dollar. Oftentimes, they were the ones, the banks that got all the money for these toxic waste that they put out there, and then get it pennies on the dollar back with the money that they got from the taxpayers. And then they go and sell it again.
Now, let me ask you a question. I understand. I mean, let me ask you a question. Here's something that's perverse. There's a dynamic attention in this that you just like, whoa, how come that rubber band hasn't broken? Think about this. The United States is the biggest debtor in history, right? Troubled times, as we're talking about unemployment and the manufacturing base of the country not working and being shipped overseas anyway, the United States is the biggest debtor in history. Yet we are funding our debt with some of the lowest interest rates in history. So you have a marginal borrower, the United States government, and they're getting preferred interest rates, some of the lowest interest rates in history. Wait a minute, but they're the biggest debtor, and the future prospects of getting paid back aren't very good. So how come they have some of the lowest interest rates in history? And I'll tell you how the game works. The game works like this. All of these banks that lost money in all of this stuff, all of these derivatives, all of the money center banks, now your little corner neighborhood bank down here, no, they're not in on this, but all of the big money center banks are in on this deal. They go to the Federal Reserve and borrow money for zero. They borrow money for zero, or as much as 0.25% from the Federal Reserve. And what do they do with that money? Do they loan it to people like you and me, or people that go out and build plant and equipment or hire people for new jobs? No. So they borrow money from the Federal Reserve at zero, and what do they do with that money? They loan
it. They get 4% on it.
Yes, they loan it to the United States government so that the United States government can keep borrowing at 2% on 10 years or whatever it is, and 4% on 30s. And so the circle is complete. This is the mythological image of the snake that swallowed its own tail and disappeared. I mean, you know, how does that work metaphysically? The snake's going to swallow its own tail and disappear. How are they going to create money at the Fed to give to the banks so the banks can make the spread? They borrow at zero and they get paid. They earn money at four. So they reliquify the banks. That's been the whole game plan. That is the reason to tear. That is the reason the Federal Reserve was created in the first place. You saw Greenspan do it in the 90s. The banks were upside down, so he inflates like crazy to save the banks, and the banks are all fine, and everything's fine with the Federal Reserve. They are the towel boy of the banks. And this whole operation now is to reliquify the big money center banks, and it's worked.
This is why Dr. Paul calls inflation a tax.
Well, yeah.
Because you know that because this gets paid for somewhere. It gets paid for in higher prices.
Yeah, let me tell you how it works. Since the Federal Reserve was created, the American people through inflation have been charged, have lost $19 trillion. It has cost the inflation in this country under the Federal Reserve has cost the American people like a thief came into their bank accounts or into their dresser or their little spare change drawer or whatever they do. Into their wallets when their pants are hanging over the chair, came in and took $19 trillion out of the pockets of the American people. Now, the official debt in this country is less than $14 trillion. That means the country wouldn't even have any national debt. They have destroyed $19 trillion of the American people's wealth under the Federal Reserve.
Okay, now here's some of the end game here, all right? We're talking about the IMF. Now, this is what the members do. Under the Articles of Agreement, have an obligation to collaborate with the fund and the International Monetary Fund, you know, to collaborate with the IMF, with each other on their international reserve policies.
Which they do anyway.
Yeah. With the objectives of promoting better surveillance of international liquidity and making the special drawing right the principal reserve asset in the IMF.
This is a move of desperation. They understand that the central banks around the rest of the world are looking at the dollar and they're going, the dollar? That was a pretty good game while it lasted. But look at these guys. They got $100 trillion in unfunded liabilities. They got $14 trillion in on-the-books debt. They have a declining economy. They're not going to be able to pay this back, and we're sitting here on untold trillions of dollars of United States money as our reserves. Okay, we're going to have to do something else. We're going to have to do so. It's a move of desperation, and moves of desperation are generally ill-conceived and seldom successful.
Well, successful to whom?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, this is what is it that they wanted? They wanted more power.
Of course, they want to perpetuate their power. They want to drag the game out. The center is not holding. Things are flying apart, and they're going, what can we do to hold on to keep this thing together?
Would involve handing it massive new powers over the global economy. Now, there has to be other, I wouldn't say superpowers, but certainly influential blocks of money on the planet that go, nah, we're not playing. I mean, is China, an IMF-er? They're going to go, oh, yeah, you'll bring us on? Or are they going to say, nah, is Putin going to do the same thing? I mean, is there the gold-based dinar in the Islamic world? Here's a quarter of the population of the planet, and they're going, maybe not,
Well, they all have, it's like Tip O'Neill once said, all politics is local. They have a huge problem. What do they do in China with massive unemployment? Remember, it's in China, too. It's all about, holding on to power. So how does the ruling party, the Communist Party in Beijing, how do they hold on to power? They cannot afford to have millions of feral young men unemployed and in the streets. They can't afford to let that happen. So they are desperate, too. And in their desperation, they're trying to figure out, okay, we've got to keep the United States solvent. We've got to keep funding their debt for a while so that, they'll keep buying cheap kitchen gimmicks things from us. And, everybody's trying to keep the game going.
Well, we're going to talk about when we come back in the next hour. Is the game going to keep going? And if so, in what form? And if not, oh, is that bad?
Oh, and you want to talk too about the treasury bills and the 30-year bills,
yeah,
and the maturity bills and all that. That's good.
30 years ago, they were at 15%. Well, a lot of people bought them. They're coming due now. What are they going to do with them? Are they going to buy them and go down to 3, 4? I have so many questions, and Charles is the man to answer them. Well, you can call in too, 866-986-6397. 986-6397. We'll be right back.